All right, we are live.
All right.
Jimmy D and the Wolf Podcast with special guest Michael Fortunato. I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Perfect. That was great. Thanks, Tim.
Great.
So, Jimmy, why don't you introduce the guest we have, because you know him. I met him just now, minutes ago.
Michael, I believe I met Michael a year or so ago, and Michael is an incredible musician, amongst many other things. You have a PhD. I'm correct, right?
It's true, yes. Mm-hmm.
And, he's just brilliant guy, forward-thinking guy, and we met through music, like I've met most of my favorite people. You know, music and this great vehicle to meet cool people that you never would have met. And we just hit it off big time, like fast friends, you know? It's kind of like just right off the bat, we're very like-minded people. He's a forward thinker and a big picture kind of guy. And what's some other stuff? He's kind of like us. He's got 10,000 logs in the fire at any given time. So easier for him to explain what he's doing than for me to.
Well, this summer, that's definitely been the case. I mean, it's incredible. And I know, and Jimmy, thank you so much. I could say all the same wonderful things about you being a forward thinker and a real community builder, you know. And that's one thing. That is one torch that I wish more people picked up these days. And a real opportunity, I think, for people in the music community. You know, I think when people see themselves as being leaders in the music community, they think, oh, that means I'm a leader within the music community. They don't often see themselves as being a leader of something bigger, you know, something, you know, the community more broadly, and how musicians can engage in all sorts of different ways that can benefit local life, which is great. But it's really funny. I mean, right now, wow. Yeah. 2020, it's like all the stuff that didn't happen in 2020, you know, everybody had a big conspiracy and they said, you know, let's figure out how to squeeze it all into a 12-week period over the summer. And that's basically what's been going on. So I feel like every gig I didn't play last year, every job I didn't get in my day job, I didn't, you know, it's all every single thing like just green lighted at the same time. And it's like,
wow,
until, you know, maybe mid August when I think, I can at least take a breather a little bit. So I don't know how it's been for you both, but wild and exciting here. Yeah.
Yeah, music's definitely slamming right now, man. It's
there have been forecasts that that were made that I read even in 2020 when we were still in the midst of the lockdown situation. And there were some, you know, some people were saying it's Armageddon and we're never going to come out of this and woe is us. And I remember a few prognosticators that said, you just wait, the demand is going to be so pent up. And they pointed to after the last pandemic in 1918, the Spanish flu, and how what came after that was probably the most rambunctious decade we've had in this country, the Roaring Twenties. And of course, there was a world war involved in that ended, so that might have contributed to it as well. But still, the demand was pent up, and unfortunately, it ended in a bit of what's the term? Overzealous exuberance with the crash in 29. But hopefully, we will avoid that. And I think that's been borne out by the demand. And I said they're saying I read an article in Billboard that said that demand for live music is just they have metrics based on how many people haven't been to a show in 2 years and how many of them are now wanting to go to a show. So they have metrics of measuring, you know, non-frequent concert goers, things like that. You know, they analyze it, and they're saying that demand is way up. So, yeah, it's a very exciting time to be a musician.
Absolutely.
And the interpersonal reactions, like I've noticed since the lockdowns ended that go to play places where I don't even know anybody and people I've never seen in my life, like hugging me and stuff like that. And they're like,
absolutely. Oh yeah.
So great. And I didn't realize how bad, like I needed some music. And you know, I love you, man. Like that kind of stuff that didn't really happen before the lockdown.
Right. Right. It's amazing. It's like, you know, people want to, you know, it's almost like they just want to open up in new ways with music. I was kind of, you know, I was really pleasantly surprised, because we were, you know, I was playing a show with the famous Noel the other night. You know, we were playing down in Madison, Indiana, and she started talking about, it's just like sort of like the banter kind of turned really serious all of a sudden. We were talking about, you know, how meaningful music is in these times, and, you know, getting through, you know, especially when you're getting through hardship. And at first I was sort of like, what are you doing? This is supposed to be a happy show. No, I mean, people were like ready for that message. They were ready to let go of some things. They were ready to talk about some things. They were ready to hear, you know, music that was, you know, kind of overt about going through pain and healing and recovering from it. And I was just like, wow, this has been an incredibly emotionally powerful year after an incredibly emotionally powerful year for different reasons. Yeah. You know, it's amazing. So I'm glad you're you know, getting that kind of response from your crowds, Jimmy. That's awesome.
People take it for granted, including myself. Before the lockdown, I was that guy. You know, there were nights where I'd be like, man, gotta go play this show. It's my sixth gig this week. You know what I'm saying? and then bam, I didn't have any. And it was like, dude, I would pay people to sit in a room with me right now and listen to me play music. Because I found out, like, I started doing the lives, and I found out pretty quickly that you don't get that reciprocity. The energy is not and cannot be the same. As you know, as a musician, you know, the live thing is where it's at, because they kind of pull you to certain places that the energy of the crowd itself does. And you just can't, if you're by yourself, it's like you can't get there from here, sort of thing. And so I was doing the lives every night, man. I did them every night for like 3 months. I just wasn't getting the juice, man. You know, it just wasn't feeding me. It was like something was still missing because I wasn't doing the shows.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It really is.
Yeah.
So that, you know, talking about music, that leads me to one of the topics that I wanted to focus on with this podcast, which is the Madison Music Movement, or M3, which is something that we have going on here, that we're partnered together. There's a board of incredible people here in Madison, Indiana, making this thing happen. We have so many logs in the fire, and it's such an ambitious thing, and we're already covering a lot of ground. But there have been many times where people have asked me, well, what is this M3 thing? And it doesn't roll off my tongue. And when people ask me, I'm like, I wish Michael was with me right now, because like, out of everybody that's on the board, if somebody was like, explain what we're doing, I would be like, go talk to Michael Fortunato. He's the guy. He can break this down. Because it just doesn't, I just look at him like, well, we're trying to do a little bit of everything, really. I think it's kind of unique, right?
Totally unique. I mean, this is, let's break it down. So here we go. It's, you know, it's a, the Madison Music Movement. I'll start out from a personal kind of a, you know, angle here, because I mean, you know, to me, this is the kind of organization I've always wanted to be a part of, because it is the combination. It's what happens when music, community development, and economic development get together. Wow, and nice. So, yeah, it's a really, you know, it's at this nexus where, you know, we recognize that there is a space where you can act on all three without having to separate them. And you know, essentially, music is already a community building activity already. I mean, you know, musicians form communities very, very naturally. And they create a sense of community in the audiences that they serve, I think, very readily and very easily. In my day job, I do a lot of community development work. A lot of that has to do with, a lot of it has to do with local leadership and how to better engage the community around you, especially with, local leaders and how they, how they actually reach out to communities and think about pulling publics in. Being a musician, I mean, it's still my inspiration for how to train others to do this kind of work. I mean, musicians are natural collaborators. They understand how to, I don't want to get too far afield. I'm going to bring this all back, but they understand how to, how to respect each other's differences while also forming an identity, a collective identity, and also getting better together.
Oh, I like that. Better together. That's awesome.
They get better together. Now, here's the interesting thing. If you look at the research on engagement, and this could be engagement with anything from, I've heard it from everything from what keeps kids in school from dropping out, all the way down to like what keeps people playing violent video games. No joke. It's called the ABCs of engagement: autonomy, belonging, competence. You said they're all three. You have a really engaged community, a really engaged bunch of people that want to commit to something bigger than themselves. And what we're doing now, I'm going to bring it all back. What we're doing through M3 is we're doing that using music as a vehicle. It's a way of basically saying that music can provide the opportunity to bring people together and give them a broader sense of the community, and also to open up opportunities for them that might be social in nature, musical in nature, or economic in nature, or all three. It's really just a way of opening up opportunity. We're trying to find ways to get, and we have this radically like non-competitive, like, get your tuchus in here and start something kind of an attitude, there's no, we are hungry for more venues. We're hungry for more musicians. We're hungry for more, studios and production companies and anything that we could start in a town of 12,900 people, which I think to a lot of people, they say that they take a look at the size of our town and they say, well, that's crazy. If you compare that to Nashville, which has a real industry, how are you going to, create anything that even comes close? And the answer is we're going to do it organically. We're not trying to be Nashville. We're not trying to be Austin. But we sure have an awful lot to offer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so this is where I think, it's just for me as somebody who does community development in the daytime and does music in the nighttime, and does a lot of economic and entrepreneurial stuff too. I mean, it's like, this is like the perfect combination of everything. It's an amazing organization to be part of.
Well, as someone who came to Madison, Indiana for the very first time within the last 2 years and didn't really know anything about it except for Jimmy, this is my hometown and I love my hometown and saying great things about it. I had this, my first reaction was, how can there be all of this going on in a community that is only 12,000-13,000 people? Yeah. And I've come to the conclusion, because it doesn't make sense unless you think about, and Jimmy has told me that in the greater region or county, or I don't know how you look at it, it's more like 40 or 50,000 people that Madison actually serves.
Yeah.
So otherwise, it makes no sense. I mean, like Jimmy said, one weekend he counted, just a random weekend, he counted there were a dozen venues with live music going on any one specific night. That's not a 12,000 population town that has that. Yeah. So you've got a very vibrant music community. I mean, you're punching way above your weight. Whether you say 12,000 or 40,000-50,000, it's still quite impressive. Yeah.
Well, and he said it, that it's happening organically. And the funny thing is, like, the Madison music movement is a pretty brand new thing, and it's already working. And the thing that I noticed is, once we got together and decided that we were going to do it, like, all these people were saying, how can I help? Everybody in town. So that, I mean, it's going to happen organically, because everybody's like, what can I do to help the cause? What can we pitch in?
Mm-hmm. So how old is M3? I mean, when was it formed, generally speaking? Was there a very finite date that you can point to?
The closest date I can point to is early February 2020.
Oh my gosh. Just
I mean, if we want to be like really specific about it. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think conversations about this have been going on. Well, okay. There's the official, I mean, there's the official M3 music movement. And then there's the very large tip of the hat that I think we need to give to, you know, the OGs, as I like to call them. You know, I mean, these are the folks that have been making Madison music what it is today. I mean, you know, one of them is on this podcast right now, Jimmy Davis. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we have to really, I think, acknowledge also that this isn't a movement that just sprung up out of nowhere at all. This is something that has been going on for a very long time. Madison has a long cultural legacy of community-minded musicians that are passionate about what they do. They care about the broader community, and they embrace this sort of radical kind of, like, you know, kindness and inclusive spirit that is, to me, very uncommon. I mean, I've lived all over the country and some internationally too, and I still to see something like that so broadly, it's such a common cultural feature with people. It's really strange. It's very unusual. Again, especially in a town the size that it is.
Well, it's amazing. You know, I can't count how many times something has happened. You know, and you know, somebody's in a car accident, or somebody gets sick, or some kind of tragic event. Mm-hmm. And people say, you know, we should put on a benefit for this person. Because, like, all the musicians in this town are so, like, intertwined and all love each other so much, that has gotten so super easy to do. And I've done a million of them, that now it's to the point that, like, something happens, it's like, everybody knows, we're going to do a benefit for, you know, whatever this looks like, we're going to do a benefit. And everybody just pitches in, and everybody donates their time, and it's not hard for us to raise, you know, piles of money to help, which is amazing, because that only happens because of such a sense of community with all the musicians. And not just, it's like interchangeable parts with any of the bands too. There's never that sense of, you know, oh, so-and-so's bass player went and did this show. It's all interchangeable.
Yeah.
No matter how you boil it down, everybody is close, and there's just a real sense of family. Mm-hmm. That's the part I love about it the most.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Are there any communities that you view as kind of a model for what you want to accomplish? Or?
Yeah, I think there's a few that are very interesting. I'm sitting in one right now. Believe it or not. So I'm actually chiming in from Santa Rosa, California, okay. Which is a place that I lived prior to moving to Madison, and prior to sort of relocating operations out there. Santa Rosa was really, I really have to honor this place. I mean, it was some of the most exciting years I think I've ever spent as a musician. And a lot of it had to do with some of the really bad things that happened to this community while I was living here. Almost as soon as I moved here, we experienced the Tubbs fire of 2017, which was a catastrophic forest fire that wiped out major sections of Northern California. In the city of Santa Rosa, it actually destroyed over 5,000 structures, leaving thousands of people homeless. And creating untold property damage, some of the most major cultural landmarks that really define this place, were absolutely taken out. One of the examples was that, major local landmark hotels, but then also, like, you know, a lot of people don't know this is Snoopy's hometown. This is where Charles Schulz lived. And of course, Charles Schulz hasn't been with us for some years, but, I believe his ancestral home was taken out, and there was a whole, you know, a lot of the community's cultural assets burned to the ground, as did a lot of the natural environment. And when I came here, I was working on a, you know, on an idea called the Music Foundry, which was a, it was like a music entrepreneurship incubator idea, you know, which was not common. And we were all ready to go. And then this catastrophic fire happened, which really, you know, but I had been coming up here. I never pulled my instruments out of the case. Never even once pulled the instruments out of the case until after the fires occurred. And all these musicians that were hanging around said, basically said, what can we do? And they all got together. They started to play together. I met more people in fewer times and made more friends here than I can practically count. And these are still very influential and very important people into my life today. I'm out here because I'm helping one of them move to Madison.
That now.
Isn't that crazy? So it's actually, you know, we're, you know, it's not a California takeover, don't worry, but it's something that I think we're, you know, I think these share something very, very important. Other ones that I've seen that have been really great, you know, I look at Denton, Texas as a great example, like, you know, and the difference between an organ, like I call it big D and little D. You've got Dallas and you got Denton. You know, Dallas is like, you know, they're trying to become a music city too. Very big, you know, well, and very kind of, you know, more of a big investment model, you know, larger clubs, big acts from major cities, things like that. Denton, all organic, independent venues, independent artists, really trying to generate momentum as a smaller community. They do have a very well-known music school at the center of their community. University of North Texas is considered one of the best big band schools in the world.
Wow.
They're at their 1 o'clock band, as it's called, might be the best college jazz band on the planet. It's incredibly competitive to get in. But it's, you know, I mean, other than that, everything is very locally driven and there's a real ecosystem around it. Those have been, I'm sure there's plenty of others, but those have been my real inspirations, I think, in terms of other places I've seen good ideas.
Okay. Well, what are the heights can this be reached? What is the vision? What's the, if you really let yourself dream, what could happen, do you think, in the M3?
Well, I know my barometer for success is very easy. It's when Jimmy Davis and I get a paying jazz gig once a month. And it's yeah, anybody that knows what the jazz market's like knows why that's such a big deal.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely.
Pay for your game.
The saying is there's more players playing jazz than there are fans.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but I think we're also just scratching the surface of, you know, if you take the strictness outside, you know, out of jazz, and you think more about what could we do with improvised music, all of a sudden that does open some new doors and some interesting things, you know. So I think there's some real opportunity for hybridization. But where could this go? I mean, you know, in a town the size of Madison, I would hate to see it so transform the place that, you know, that we end up being a Key West story.
Yeah.
Key West is great for what it is, but if you ask people that live there, you know, they remember a very different Key West before it became so tourist focused that it, you know, the incumbent people just can't even recognize their own community. Many of them can't even afford to be there. So it's a, I would hope that we find a balance. You know, I think, and Jimmy, I'll ask you what your vision is too, and Tim, please feel free to chime in. I mean, I think we're open slate right now, but I mean, I think it would be great to have, like, you know, 12 full time and an additional 12 part time who's pumping out local tunes. I think it would be great to see an artist ecosystem emerge where we actually have, like, a social infrastructure behind music. That means, like, you know, songwriter workshops, artist housing, places for, you know, I would love to see spaces within Madison and maybe even in some of the places around Madison being transformed by the arts community and actually having, you know, places where you could have artist collectives. You could actually have, you know, places that are where they're actually doing the community transformation, along with the rest of the broader community. That's a once a month jazz gig. I'm telling you, that's the cherry on top. Well, I don't know. Beyond that, I'm not sure. I have no idea.
And it's like early on when, like, I always, not to be a pessimist, but I always think about FMA's failure mode analysis. How can it go wrong? And Todd Boone asked very, very early on in discussions. He said, you know, well, what could stop it? And I'm like, well, right. So let's think about how can it fail? What's the worst thing that could happen? He's like, what do you think is the worst thing that could happen? So the worst thing that could happen is that it's not Madison anymore. And you just said it, that it turns into some kind of really, you know, just uber touristy thing that loses the small town vibe. We don't want it to be Gatlinburg.
Right.
You know, and so it has to happen organically. But I'm with you, man. And, you know, one of the big things to me, and it's so hard to, like, explain this when people ask about what's the goal with M3, and I always think ease of use for creatives.
Yeah.
No, songwriters. Yeah. If it's not going to take long for that word to get out when songwriters say, hey, there's this little town in Southern Indiana. First off, it's freaking beautiful. Secondly, everybody loves music. There's a lot of musicians there. Housing is affordable. They have, you know, health care is in place for us. And that's a long putt, I know. But then they have all these venues. You know, we're working enough to get by. Most musicians, all they need to do is get by. As you know, we're all wired that way. And so that's kind of the, to me, the pinnacle of success would be when that word is out and musicians from all over the country or the world are saying, Madison, man, they take care of their creative. And it's not just music. I mean, as you know, we have lots of incredible arts here. The culture here is amazing for the town, but ease of use is where my mind goes. You know, we take care of the musicians and they will take care of the rest.
I love that. That's an incredible vision, because it's not, you know, I think if the vision is too specific and not focused enough around the people behind, you know, in community development work, one thing I push back on a lot with communities is that when I ask them to describe their perfect community, they describe a lot of stuff. You know, they're talking about, oh, well, when we get this amenity and this amenity and this amenity and this amenity. Now take that idea and just apply it to, like, one of your close friends, you know, somebody that says, well, once I have this car and this job and this, you know, guitar and this whatever, I'll be happy, you know, and I'll be a better musician and I'll be a better, you know. And it's not necessarily about that. It's about the relationships you make along the way. And from those relationships, that's where a lot of that abundance comes from. You know, it's like you start to get you know, this really incredible sense of not just musical and creative abundance, but, you know, I mean, hopefully some, you know, I mean, we do want our artists to prosper as well. I mean, you know, to get by and to feel comfortable, which they don't in a lot of big towns. You know, it's hard living. You know, it's a job. Yeah.
I mean, you move to most music cities, it's blunt force trauma, dude. If you're a songwriter, yeah, you go to Nashville or New York or LA, you know you're going to be eating ramen noodles for the first few years that you get there. You know? And I think that if we can make it a little bit easier on them than that. And it's funny because my mind always goes back to this. I've met so many great musicians, especially in the blues world, from Portland. Mm-hmm. Musicians older than me, most of them, you know, great players. And there's many, many of them, an unnatural amount of them. And it seems like every time I would get to talking to him, be like, how'd you get your start? Well, we had this rehearsal space in Portland. It had like 50 rooms in it. It had like 50 rehearsal spaces. And I had heard this my entire life. And I'd meet other musicians. Where are you from? Portland. Really? Well, yeah. Well, we had this rehearsal space. And I finally got the skinny on it, that there was some rich guy that just said, you know what, I'm just going to buy this big, huge warehouse and put all these rehearsal spaces in there. Wagon wheel tanks.
Thanks, Tony. And thanks, Adam, for your comment earlier. That's awesome.
But literally, that entire scene was born from this guy. He just put a warehouse there with all these rehearsal spaces. And you know what happened after that. It all happened organically. Some of them became engineers. Some of them became musicians. Some of them became, you know, stagehands or whatever. Some of them became booking agents. They developed an entire ecosystem because this guy bought a warehouse and said, oh, it's all for music, whole thing.
Yeah. I think it was Springsteen that said he couldn't have been the kind of player or musician or songwriter he had if it wasn't for that, you know, where he went to college, which was those late night jam sessions, you know, those late night Jersey jam sessions that would like go on until 4 a.m. where like the young players would get together and just, you know, they would just, you know, shed with other people. And it's like, you know, all that stuff builds an ecosystem. I mean, it's like, you know, you have one spot where all the people, anytime you got people getting together to do this kind of thing, like you're going to have that kinetic exchange, and it just, you know, creates still momentum. Yeah.
Things that it's never the way that you see it, that you think it's going to happen. The cool stuff always happens in a way that you go, oh, I didn't think it'd be like that.
Right. I don't know. It's Tim, what do you think? You've been to Madison. What do you think about, you know, where the community can go and, you know?
Well, I mean, as not living there, I don't know that I'm qualified to, or even, you know, I've only been connected with it through Jimmy. So
to interrupt you, Tim, but something that was really, really funny is one of the first times Tim came up, he was like, why are all these people on golf carts?
Yeah.
Zipping around on golf carts.
Yeah, I've fallen in love with the community. I mean, the historic district, I'm a huge fan of historic buildings and being right on the river. I mean, there's just something about, I mean, there's even been research by scientists, people who research these things. Human beings do better when we're next to a body of water. There's something about a body of water, whether it's an ocean or a lake or a river, and towns that are, or residences that are close to a body of water, that's a lot to offer. And, you know, it's fairly intriguing to me, and I don't see any reason why, you know, Madison can't be. I mean, the one, and maybe it's not a good example, but it's an example that I think of as a small town, is Muscle Shoals. I mean, it's any musician knows Muscle Shoals, you know, and I don't think it lost its character. And it's still mentioned today. People are still saying, hey, I recorded down in Muscle Shoals. I've sent an article. As I see a lot of artists, I follow a lot of artists and read a lot of periodicals trying to keep up with what's going on, and it's still a thing, you know. So whether that's to aspire to, or I don't know that if it was any negative ramifications from that, but I mean, it is possible to be a small town and still really have a big name because of what comes out of that small community, I guess.
Well, one of the crazy things is the couple that moved here from Northern Indiana, Johnny and Sally, they opened their studio in that building. That building looks like freaking Muscle Shoals playing jazz at the Circle K for Polar Pops.
We just got another venue. How about that? That's great.
I have not played at in Giga Circle K. We're gonna have to open a jazz venue for 6 months. Maybe we can have enough money to keep the doors open for 6 months and just play jazz there.
We'll put it right next to Circle K, call it the Square L or something like that. Right, exactly. That's great. Fantastic.
Well, Michael, thank you for being on with us, man. It's great to talk to you. Great to see you. Thanks for talking about some of what we have going on with the Madison Music Movement. It's exciting, and you're a huge part of it. And And there's lots of other people on the board too. We're so lucky to have the people involved. Todd Boone is really the driving force. Tony Novello, great people like Dominic Grody, Sean Auksher, Kim, who's one. Kim Nyberg is like my spirit animal. She's one of my heroes.
One of mine too, for sure.
I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out. Sean Auksher. So it's a great group of people.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks so much for being on with us.
Absolutely.
Appreciate your time.
It was so great to talk with you both. You know, Jimmy, I'll see you soon. And Tim, I hope to see you in Madison sometime.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Absolutely.
Most definitely.
All right. Wrap it up. See you next time.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.